Alexa, who is Adam Ferrara?
Adam Ferrara is an American actor and comedian known for playing the roles of Chief Needles Nelson on Rescue Me, Sergeant Frank Fiorelli opposite Edie Falco on Nurse Jackie. He was a co-host on the U.S. version of Top Gear, and his current stand-up special is called It's Scary in Here. It's available for you free on YouTube. Adam's new podcast is a big hit and available everywhere.
Sounds like it could be funny.
Sounds to me like 30 minutes you'll never get back.
I'm so glad you guys are here because it is showtime. We have another great show for you again this week. My guest in the ADD interview is actor, writer, comedian, game show host, and his name is Ben Glebe. And we want to welcome everyone from our Talk to Me Tuesday family. That's our conversation we have every week, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Go to my website, click the link, and join our conversation. And our superfan shout-out is for Nick. Say hi to Nick.
Hey, Nick.
Nick, that's my beautiful wife, Alex, and it's just the three of us. Stern is at the U.S. Open. He's working hard today. And Phil is still adrift. So it's me, you, and Nick.
I was going to say the three of us.
Yeah, it's me, you, and Nick.
Okay.
Yeah, and Nick said, what? No Lancaster, Pennsylvania dates? Because you posted a tour poster on Instagram. And I'm going to Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. And I'm going to Newtown, Pennsylvania. And apparently he wants me to go to Lancaster. I don't know how far it is, but...
Get an Uber, Adam.
I'm like DoorDash comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the thing.
That's
Or you should start it.
Well, you know what's cool is Ben Glebe started the Nowhere Comedy Club, which is basically, it's you can have the comedy show come to your house over Zoom, but it's all dressed up. It's really, yeah, it was really cool. He did it during the pandemic and it's still going on, which is something I'm thinking of doing.
Right. Well, how does it work?
He's actually got a studio in his house. You stand in the house, and people can sign on to the show.
It's like the audience is like the Brady Bunch thing.
Yeah, you get big boxes and stuff, and you play into everybody. And you can
hear them clap.
They leave their mics on, you can hear them, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, you should try that.
I'm thinking of doing it.
Yeah.
Because apparently people aren't coming from Lancaster, so I got to go to Lancaster.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there you go, over Zoom.
There you go. So, yeah, so Ben Glebe, that's one of the things he did. He also hosted the news. He was a game show host. He was a really interesting guy. And one of the things I found really interesting is he's got ADD as well, but he didn't get diagnosed till he was in his 40s.
Or he put it off until he was 40. You know, because I think you're born with it, aren't you?
I don't know. I'm affected by it. I don't know how it got here. It's just something I got to deal with.
When did you get diagnosed?
I'm pretty sure I was a kid, because I remember in the second grade, they said, come with us. And that's when everything changed.
No.
Yeah. That's when everything changed. We were in these little reading groups and they took the book. And I was like, this isn't good. You're taking the book. So
they took the book away from you.
Yeah. But I think the second grade, but I'm not sure.
Oh, well,
my mother would know.
Hey, let's call your mom.
Call my mother?
Yeah.
All right. But you're going to hear about dinner. Look what time it is. We're either going to hear about dinner or, God forbid, somebody died. We're going to hear about that. So you want to take a chance?
Yeah, let's take a chance.
All right. It's either dinner or death, but we'll call my mother.
Find out.
Hello.
Hi, Ma.
Who is this?
How many people call you Ma?
Oh, hey, Phil.
Yeah, it's me, Phil. I love you and I miss you. What are you doing?
I have a chicken cutlet. Stuffed with prosciutto, pimentos, and mozzarella. And I'm heating it up because I'm hungry.
All right. Well, Ma, I wanted to ask you. When I was a kid, I had trouble focusing. I still do have trouble focusing. Did you notice that?
What do you mean by focusing?
Like I was always all over the place.
Well, you never stayed still. Even now, you walk up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
Nervous energy.
Yeah, he's got a lot of nervous energy.
What?
Yeah.
Being hyperactive?
It's not nervous energy. It's like I got to move.
If you stay still, it bothers you.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's tougher to hit a moving target.
But that's your personality, kid.
Mm-hmm. Do you have that?
No, I can sit still.
How about
I don't know who the hell you take after.
Ma? Was I adopted?
Are you what?
Was I adopted?
No, you were not adopted. Are you kidding me?
All right. I don't know, Ma.
First of all, we were married and I was young.
Right.
We were two young kids. Mm-hmm. We didn't know nothing. So the first year or two, we were always arguing.
Mm-hmm.
So after 2 years, everything was calm.
Then you figured, let's steal a child from the mall?
Oh, Adam. Oh, God.
All right, Ma. I thought you might remember at what age I got diagnosed with ADD, but it's all right. You doing okay?
I'm hungry.
All right.
Let her eat, Adam.
All right. Well, I love you, Ma.
I love you.
All right. I'll call you tomorrow, okay?
Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye. Honey, I think my mother has ADD. She didn't answer the question at all.
No, she didn't.
No. But at least we know there's a stuffed chicken cutlet for dinner.
There you go.
Yeah.
She was hungry. She needed to eat.
Yeah. So anyway, we don't know what age I got diagnosed, but Ben Glebe was in his 40s, and it was I really enjoyed our conversation. So you guys listen to this, and we will see you on the other side.
Difficulty staying on task, being easily distracted, constantly losing things, and never finishing projects, all are telltale signs of adult attention deficit disorder. Lots of people think they may have adult ADD, but sometimes symptoms are the result of other issues.
Because I'm hungry.
All right.
You're listening to the Adam Ferrara Podcast. This is 30 minutes you will never get back.
Can I go now?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
I have got some stand-up dates for you. I hope you come see me on the road because I will make you laugh. September 16th, I am at the Opera House in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. September 17th, I am at the Newtown Theater in Newtown, Pennsylvania. September 23rd and the 24th, I'm in New York City at Gotham Comedy Club. October 6th, special show at the Gilmore Car Museum in Richland, Michigan. October 7th through the 9th, I will be at the Chicago Improv. October 14th and 15th, I will be at the Arlington Draft House. And October 20th through the 22nd, I will be at the Comic Roadhouse in Uncasville, Connecticut. Grab your aunt, grab your uncas, and come and see me. There's a link to tickets right here in the show notes, or you can go to my website and click the link there. And you know I want to say thank you. Yes, I do. If you can make any of these gigs, please come up after the show. And let me thank you for the love and support you've shown me and this podcast. All right, go on. You know, get out of here.
ADHD, it's not just for kids.
Welcome to the ADD interview. It's not that you're not interesting, it's just that I can't focus. And my guest this week is...
Oh, look, a bird!
My guest this week is an actor, stand-up, game show host, and virtual comedy club owner. You know him from Chelsea Lately, the game show Idiot Test. His new special is called The Mad King, and it's available for you right now, free on YouTube. He responds well to pressure, he's dreaded being called on in class, and he went to therapy because of a parking lot fight with coffee creamer. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Ben Glebe. How are you?
I'm good, Adam. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. Thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. What a great, unique intro. My goodness.
Well, you just did it. I just put it together, Ben. This is your life, my friend.
This is a strong point. I take it all back. I'm great.
That's good. Yeah, and I was listening to The Mad King this morning, your special. It's great. I really enjoyed it. Laughed out loud a couple times. And I wanted to ask you about the parking lot fight with the guy with the big jug of coffee creamer in his hand.
Yes. Yes, that was a low point in my recent life. Whenever you think you've got, whenever you think you got life figured out, you get splattered with a man's coffee creamer in a parking lot with your parents there, and your 70-year-old mother has to break up a fight, and you realize you maybe need a little professional help.
Yeah, oh, I gotta hear this story.
So I, you know, went drinking after a night out doing a gig at a Supernova in L.A., and I drank too much, so I Ubered home, and I had forgotten that my car was, the next morning, forgotten it was in a parking lot still. And I didn't want to pay for the Uber to go pick up my car, so I did what any responsible 43-year-old man would do. I called my parents for a ride.
Okay.
And they gave me a ride, and it was a nightmare ride already because my dad was doing a bunch of things that were quite frustrating in the phone call, asking me to reset passwords, that somehow parents have the ability to lose them so deep in the internet that they can't be found, you can't reset them. I mean, it's unreal. Like, somehow, like, I'll say to my dad, like, come on, how can you not reset this password? It's very easy. You just click forgot password. He hands me the phone. I'm like, you've somehow done it. I can't fix this either. What have you done? How did you? And I get to the parking lot already frustrated. And the attendant towed my car.
The guy
I was already having
lot.
A bad day. Parking lot attendant towed my car. And I asked him why. And he said he needed the spot. And I looked around the parking lot. And it was near empty. I was literally helping this parking lot's business. I was helping them look like an attractive parking lot to keep your car in.
Right.
And he did it just to be a dick. And I lost my temper. And I took my sunglasses off and I threw them on the ground. And I figured, why not destroy more of my own property?
Okay.
And I did not anticipate they would bounce and almost hit the guy in the face. And he was on a smoke break, and he immediately starts trying to burn me with his cigarette. I'm now immediately in a firefight with no warning, and my father tried to get in the middle, and my dad starts speaking to the guy in Spanish, so now I have to go translate through my dad, so I'm trying to have a fight while asking my dad, that's not quite what I said, Pop. Do you mind translating a little more accurately while I'm about to get burned to death? And then his buddy from another parking lot comes over and tries to help him. The guy's holding a one-gallon coffee-made creamer, and he undoes the top and throws it on me. And I'm now covered in vanilla creamer in this parking lot. And I'm soaking wet, and it smells good because it's vanilla, but I'm very wet. And he starts swinging at me, and my 70-year-old mother had to get in between me and this parking lot attendant. And at that point, I realized maybe a little therapy could not hurt.
Oh,
and
wow.
I decided to try therapy for the first time in my life.
That's, look, I was just depressed, Glebe, but you got a story.
Yeah, look, if your life's going to take a dark turn, you may as well get a bit out of it.
Sure.
That's what I believe.
Yeah.
It's probably what so much of what has led comics down bad roads is like, I probably shouldn't be doing this, but hey, it'll be a great bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, was there funny in the house growing up? Were your mom and dad funny?
They were, yeah, very funny in different ways. My mom, very sarcastic, quiet and sarcastic. Mm. And my dad, just like a showman, should have become an entertainer, never did it, regrets it to this day. And just cracking jokes with every human possible, from good jokes to dad jokes, probably tending towards the dad joke side of that spectrum. Mm. And just always, always funny. I mean, to the point of like, where I do this virtual show now at Nowhere Comedy called Glebe Off the Top, crowd work and improvised madness, and I've had some of the greats as my special guests, Proops and Colin Mockery and Jamie Kennedy and all these great people, and my dad has been my special guest twice, and he kills it for 2 hours of improv.
That's great. What does your dad do? What's his profession?
He's retired now, but he was a real estate broker for a long time, property manager, and then became a luggage salesman for many years.
Oh, my God. And I worked at E. Vincent Luggage in the Walt Whitman Mall on Long Island.
Oh, damn. Okay.
I sold Hartman Luggage. I sold you lock bags. I had any kind of attaché you want.
Yeah, lock bags, Hartman, big thing for sure. The Briggs and Rileys of the world.
Sure.
And my dad, he loved it, loved talking to people. He was at a store called Savinar Luggage, and like the mayor would come in and all these old stars would come in, and he'd love that more than anything. But he refused to learn how to use the engraving machine that would put people's initials,
right?
The monogram machine. He refused to do that. Parents don't like to learn how to do stuff.
Now, there's a point where you go, enough. There's nothing. Yep. There's no more room on the hard drive. This is what I know. I'm there, Ben. Ben, I have all these TVs in my house. I end up watching football on my phone standing over the sink because I know how to do that.
Yeah, we have a lot of inefficiencies in our brains, and I've kind of hit that breaking point too, where I'll criticize my dad for not learning new things, and then I'll turn to my fiance and be like, "Oh, how do I log into this?"
Yes,
so
I
at the same time, I don't quite get it. And also, like, there's these little inefficiencies that I think are, I don't know if that's just a comic brain or just any human trying to make his way in the world, but like you say, standing over the sink watching football reminds me of like the times when like I'll like use the restroom and then, or I'll be like about to like take my pants off to go to bed, and then I'm like, oh, I have to close the window and lock the door, and I'll walk around the house with the pants around my ankles,
oh yeah,
hurting my back instead of lifting them up and re-zipping them.
Yep.
I'm like, they're already down.
Yep.
And I'm like a child, like a toddler walking around my house in my pants. We're idiots.
Yeah, what do you think? You're the only one? Do you know how many times I've made coffee or something in the kitchen? I've spilled some on the floor, and rather than wiping it up, I'll use my sock as a mop. I've done that 3 times a week that happens.
Interesting. You should start buying brown socks.
Yes. But you were recently, you know, you were recently diagnosed with ADD, which I thought was amazing, because I got it as a kid, and I had it way before it was cool. You know, I had it, you know, when they would just, the treatment was this, sit down. That was it. But you got a great bit in your act I wanted to play.
I'm 43 years old, and I was diagnosed this year with ADHD. It's kind of late for the diagnosis, but I never knew I had ADHD, despite the thousands of people who've told me over the course of my life. And I'm on Adderall now. This is a miracle pill. It's a miracle pill. It helps you remember what you're supposed to focus on in your life. I just wish there was a pill to remind me to take that pill.
I love that joke. You know why? My favorite supplement to take is my vitamin C, because it turns my pee yellow. And when I pee yellow, I know, oh, I've taken my vitamins. I'm okay.
Well, I hate to break this to you, Adam. Your pee's supposed to be yellow. I don't know what your pee color was before. What was it, purple before?
It was blood red. There was an issue. No, it makes it like highlighter yellow. I'm like, oh, it's nuclear yellow. Okay. I've taken my supplements.
That's better. But that's how you remember afterward.
Afterwards, yeah. So you got diagnosed in your 40s. Was there an incident? What happened? Were you hopping in your pants and your fiance said, maybe you should see somebody?
Sadly, that's another issue we have still yet to diagnose. the ADHD, it came from the fact that I would still have these enormous to-do lists every day. Mm-hmm. And my fiance would come back from like normal person work and be like, did you do your things today? And I'm like, I got zero of them done.
Right.
Or maybe one if it was an efficient day out of a list of 20 things. And I just couldn't focus. And she recommended that I meet with a psychiatrist to see if I had ADD. And 5 minutes into describing my life to the psychiatrist, including an anecdote like, I just don't get around to things. Like, for example, I recorded a stand-up album in Atlanta that Margaret Cho kindly produced for me.
Mm-hmm.
This is that I haven't released, and this was 6 years ago. I still haven't gotten around to releasing it. And she's like, yeah, you have a severe case of ADHD.
Wow. Did they give you the test? Like, do you interrupt? Do you do that? Because they gave me the test. I was diagnosed. Ben, halfway through the test, I couldn't focus. The doctor's like, I think you got it.
They didn't give me a test. No, she just tell my general demeanor, just off my vibe, she was like, you got a problem, son.
Wow. And did they put you on Ritalin? Adderall?
They put me on Adderall. And I really liked that. It's actually the only, that clip that you played, it has the only two words that I regret from the special where I called it a miracle drug. I mean, I know it does work great for a lot of people, and it worked for me for the first 6 months when I recorded the special, but I actually just quit it because it was not helping me focus after all, because... And this might be, you know, I don't know if it's a compliment or an insult to my brain, but what it, like, it doesn't just help you focus. It's supposed to help you, like, realize what's important to get done. Like, you kind of connect to your priorities. But I hacked it. I, like, convinced myself that things that were not important were important to my day, so I could relax and then focus.
Yeah, it was a problem. It's speed. That's all it is. It's salt-based amphetamine.
Yep.
Because when they gave it to me, I took it and I went, I know this feeling. I stopped taking it. I'm like, this is speed. I know what this is.
Same. Yeah, I stopped it. And it was making me very emotional. I was like crying randomly.
Really?
I'm a grown man. I would like minor things would happen. I'd be crying. I was also getting very irritable. This was also the parking lot fight, for example, happened 1 week into being on Adderall. So that's a good example.
Yeah. Right. There's speed's a bad drug. It's just a bad drug. Weed is kind of like, you never really get in a fight on weed. You're like, look, can't we just talk about it? Maybe get some donuts. Let's just do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't make you that aggressive. But this joke I love from your act, too.
You ever accidentally smuggle drugs across an international border? I've done it. I had to go do shows in Canada a couple years ago. And comedy clubs put you up either in a hotel or in a comedy condo they own. And when they have a comedy condo, you stay in the same place every year. So luckily, that's the place that I happened to accidentally smuggle drugs to, a place where I would return. I looked in my bag as I was unpacking, and I saw a full eighth of weed. And I thought, okay, I'm going to hide this here somewhere so a comic in the future could enjoy this. And I saw a display case with a vase in it. And I thought, that would be perfect. No one uses those dumb vases. And I open it, and I'm about to drop the eighth of weed in there. And I see another eighth of weed in the vase. Another comedian had the same exact thought. So I realized I had to smoke his weed, of course. So I grab his weed, and I smoke it. And the second I smoke it, a memory hits me. I put that there 2 years earlier.
That's great. I could just remember. I could just see you just sitting there when you first come out of the weed. You're like, hey, wait a minute.
It was amazing. It was right after I got high again when you get that next level of clarity. And I was like, wait, deja vu just hit me in a very strange way.
Yeah.
And I realized it was mine. The part I didn't share in that story and probably shouldn't share now, but I will share now. Mm-hmm. But just so you know, this is not true for legal reasons. This obviously is a comedic embellishment. But it wasn't just weed that I found in that bag. I'd also accidentally, perhaps, potentially, allegedly, also smuggled over a baggie full of like 10 Molly capsules.
Okay, well, there's that. So, that's a separate vase, Ben.
That's a separate... Well, no, that's not even a vase. What I did with that one, potentially, off the record, didn't actually do it. But if I had done it, what I would have done... It's like the OJ book. Yeah. I killed him. I might have tried to, or would have tried to find some industrial-grade duct tape in the comedy condo and tape the baggie to the back of a painting on the wall so it would always be there.
Oh, wow.
And nobody would know.
That's, now you're thinking.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you ever go to a certain province in British Columbia, let me know and I will
go behind the Blue Boy painting.
Yep. He's going to be a lot more than blue in a few minutes.
Well, I'll tell you this. Weed actually helps my ADD better than the Adderall did. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Here's what I think is I think it knocks out my anxiety. So I can focus better. So I think it moves the, because a lot of my ADD comes from not being able to focus, but I think it also comes from running away from an emotion before it comes up. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, it does.
I think that's what it does for me. And weed just kind of makes that anxiety go away. So now I can focus and get stuff done.
Yeah. I just found a gummy that a friend of mine recommended to me that helps me focus. It's a weed gummy. That's pretty good, although he also has had drug problems in the past and has gone off the rails.
Right.
So I don't know that he's the best person to be taking the advice from. But I also have been experimenting a little bit with microdosing of mushrooms, and I feel like that's pretty solid, too. A lot of people are using that kind of for a focus.
I haven't gotten – I've been starting to read about it. I was watching – DeStefano just took mushrooms for the first time. But I got friends that microdose, and they swear by it. What would you think the benefit would be? Have you tried it or have you had any?
I have tried it. Yeah, I have tried it. The only negative is that I've enjoyed full dose dosing. So microdosing, sometimes you're just like, when does it become fun?
Yeah, you're teasing me.
Yeah, exactly right. It's like, oh, you're just walking by in the bar. We don't actually get to go home and fuck. All right, fine. Fair enough. But I have tried the microdosing too, and it just feels good. But I was just in Amsterdam, and in Amsterdam, the microdosing is 1 gram, whereas here in the States, it's 0.1 gram. So the microdosing there is 10 times more than a microdose. It actually starts to kind of overtake you, and it's like just on the verge of tripping, whereas microdosing here, it just kind of you very lightly feel like kind of like turned up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit like that Adderall feeling without, you know, wanting to fight parking lot attendants and destroy your life. So it might be a good middle ground. I need to dive in deeper.
Yeah, here's the thing that I always... I'm cautious of. I don't want to have to need something to survive, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I went to meditation. I'm like, I'd rather do something I can do. You know, yeah. I don't want to be beholden to anybody else or anything else that I once I can't get it. Now my life is different, you know. I don't know if that makes
sense. That's true.
You know?
Yeah, and I don't even like the idea of being on something every day, being reliant on something every day. How long is it going to last? Are we going to be 70, still needing to get shit done and taking the same drug every day? So, damn it, now my whole plan is out the window. I don't know what the move is now. Meditation? What kind of meditation do you recommend?
I started my meditation teacher, his name is Dean Slider. He's got a book called Natural Meditation, which kind of demystifies everything. You know,
yeah.
It after you do it, you can observe your. It gave me perspective to observe the shit I was doing myself. If that makes any sense. It's like here's your conditioned response to what you to how you behave, and it gives you a perspective where I'm not identifying with those conditioned response. I can see what they are objectively, and then I can make a different choice.
I like that a lot. I would like to check that out. Although I don't know how I feel about a meditative teacher. Being named Slider, that sounds a little bit loosey-goosey for a guy that's supposed to take it to the next level.
Yeah, he was in the original Top Gun. He was one of the pilots, and then that went bad.
He's delicious when he comes in threes as a mini burger.
Well, I'll send you the book. I'll send you the book and see if you get any use out of it. Yeah,
I would love that.
Do you process better by listening or by reading?
I process pretty well both ways, but reading I think sticks in my brain better because I have that voice where I read out loud. I read very slowly, so I read, so I'm getting kind of both. I kind of hear it and see it when I read.
Okay.
But listening is totally fine too.
I just asked you because I was interested because I'm dyslexic too. I got a bag full of problems, Ben. So I'm dyslexic too. So I process better by listening, and that's how I get into comedy because I got those comedy albums when I was a kid, and I would just play them over and over again, and they would keep me company. Ben, I used to record the television on a reel-to-reel tape recorder that my grandfather gave me, and I would record and just listen. So the rhythms and stuff. That's how I would listen and process stuff.
That's true. Audio actually is a great way. I mean, I remember that's how I first got into stand-up. This special that I just dropped is my ode to George Carlin. He's the reason I'm a comic, and I still have it right here in the background. My George Carlin Playing With Your Head audio cassette is the album that like made me want to be a comic, and I love how he can be both commenting on the world and silly as can be.
Yeah.
I just love that about him and the rhythms of his voice and the way he uses his voice as an instrument, not just being monotone like I feel like most comics are these days. He kind of really tries to bring a lot of different flavors to what he does. That's something I really love about George. Also, I find it fascinating that you have both ADD and dyslexia. You don't even have ADD. You've got dad or something.
Yeah, I got a lot of problems, man. And Carlin, for me, I'm actually looking for something to show you. Carlin, for me, was one of those cassettes. My aunt gave me a cassette of George Carlin. Yep.
Check it out.
This
is my Playing With Your Head cassette right there.
Yeah, yeah. I had Class Clown, and then I had a bootleg where she just made one on a Memorex tape. And I would walk around, and it was just, Walkman's just popped up, and I was walking around listening to that. All my other friends were listening to music and stuff, which I'm really into music as well, but the comics just spoke to me, because Evening at the Improv was this weird little show that you could kind of get on the black and white TV in your mother's room, but you never knew what time it was on. It would just pop up, and it was just enchanting to me. Yeah.
I love that you think that a Walkman, you had to walk around listening to it.
That's the ADD. I couldn't sit still. I had to go.
This thing says walk, man, so I'm walking.
I'm doing what it says. So, your new special, The Mad King, you recorded it in Philadelphia?
Yep.
And one of the jokes on it was, I thought was very funny. And the germ joke really spoke to me. I want to play this one.
We've had weird hypocrisies with germs for a very long time, even pre-pandemic. People never wanted to share cups with anybody else. That was always a big line for people. Like you'd be at a house party and you put your cup down and you'd come back and now there's another cup near your cup. And you'd be like, I'm sorry, is this your cup or my cup? But then we would all go outside in that same party, stand in a circle of 16 people and pass a joint around. And just suck on the same wet paper. Soggy, disintegrating, wet. Let's get another. Pass it around and get this bukkake joint going around one more time. Let's get more people. Can we get 40 salivas on here?
That was funny.
Thank you very much. It is just so true. It's like, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the liquid or something, but like, we really have that very weird double standard. Mm-hmm. Like, there's like, and it shows you how badly we want to get high too. It's disgusting. You get that wet joint. It's truly soaky wet. And you're like, I'm in, I guess.
Yeah, no, not me. Shotgun me. I'd rather do that. I'm not going anywhere near this. I'm just, I can't do it.
Smart.
Well, let me ask you this. When you went back to doing stand-up, because you created the Nowhere Comedy Club. And for those of you who don't know Nowhere Comedy Club, COVID hits and comics are home and marriages are about to break up because we can't be, you know, bridled. We have to walk. The Walkman says walk. The comic says tour. Right? So you started Nowhere Comedy Club, which was essentially, if I understand correctly, it's a Zoom show, yeah?
Yeah, Zoom, like, taken to the nth degree. Basically, I had this idea to try to be able to create live touring without needing to be in person in front of people. Mm-hmm. And I just closed my eyes for a second. We were against the wall and all clubs closed and we didn't have a way to make any money. Mm-hmm. And people around the world didn't have any entertainment. I thought, how can we recreate live entertainment, live stand-up, without leaving the house? And I thought if you use a video conferencing platform, and we tested a bunch and Zoom was the best, and just let the audience turn their cameras on, mm-hmm. and their mics on, mm-hmm. which a lot of shows didn't do at first. And then if we produced on top of it, so we figured out how to make it like next level, like truly feel like live performance. Like, we would have showroom managers around the world that would virtually manage the audio and lower the audience's mics down so they'd be about the same audio differential as a comic with a mic on a stage versus people who are in the audience, and we'd mute them and they'd monitor the audio and bounce people out if need be, and had pre-show music vibes and pre-show videos of upcoming shows and customer service, and just created a full feature experience of a night out. So compared to most shitty Zoom shows, ours really feels, and we're still doing it, really feels like a night out at a club. Mm-hmm. And then we took it a step further and built an actual studio in my home here in LA. And it's this beautiful studio where you're surrounded by 30 feet of video screens and you stand on an actual stage and you perform and you see your audience surrounding you just like in a theater or club. And it was so successful. I've had Bill Burr perform 2 hours of stand-up right here in my house. Sarah Silverman, the Sklar Brothers, Daniel Van Kirk, Jay Moore, James Adomian, John Cleese, and I do a show together here called Cleese Leave Me Alone with his daughter Camilla as well. And it's insane. And we figured out how to really make it so that it's not going to replace touring. Touring is still better, but it's as close as you can come. It's way better than those stupid honking your car horn drive-in shows that we did during the pandemic.
I did those. God.
So stupid.
Yeah.
So
it's like working oncoming traffic.
Yeah, exactly. The worst sound for everybody in life became laughter somehow. I don't know how they did that. How about actual laughter sounds better? Mm-hmm. And so we created this thing. We've had like a bunch of New York Times profiles, and people can go check out what shows we have at nowherecomedyclub.com. But we just brought back The Green Room with Paul Provenza. Mm-hmm. With another one coming soon. Set List is going to be at our club. I do the show Glebe Off the Top all the time. I have one September 3rd. I have one October 1st. And it's a really cool way to see a show. So us comics now don't have to tour 50 weeks a year. We can tour the cities we have bigger followings, then offer virtual shows when we don't, and give everybody in the world a chance to get a ticket. And there are all these sub-communities too. There are all these communities we never realized didn't even have a chance to ever see stand-up, even pre-pandemic, like disabled people, people with social anxiety, agoraphobics, those that can't afford a full night out, those that live in remote, boony-ass areas and nobody comes and performs in their town. They can now see their favorite comics live for way cheaper than going out for a full night out. So it's been a really cool thing. And, you know, like I said, it's kind of an autopilot now, so I was able to return to my stand-up full-time and just kind of manage this thing on the side. We got a great team running it. But it's been really cool.
That's great. I mean, you saw a need for something, you fulfilled the need, and you made it better than people's expectations. You're in your living room with 30 screens. You're like in a Buffalo Wild Wings. You're just sitting around. You got all these...
Without the bleach smell.
Yeah, without the bleach smell and that vinegar stink in the bathroom when someone dropped it, because they dropped a wing behind a toilet that hasn't been cleaned up in a couple of weeks.
Yes. Vinegar, bleach, and a hint of spicy buffalo. Not a dream.
Well, you do so many things, man. You do stand up. You're obviously an entrepreneur with the vision you have. You even hosted ABC News, I was reading.
I did, yeah.
How was that being a newscast? Did you shuffle your papers at the end?
I did not shuffle papers. It was, I was just thinking about this yesterday. It was the most, like, intense thing I've ever done. Like, nothing makes me nervous. Like, I've, you know, interviewed presidents. I've, like, messed with people in all kinds of high, but intense hidden camera situations. Nothing makes me nervous. That made me a little nervous. I was co-anchoring with Amna Nawaz, who's now the lead anchor, soon to be taking over lead anchor of PBS NewsHour. She was just on Meet the Press the other day, and she and I were co-anchoring. And, like, it was easy on, like, light stories. And then we're going live to Brussels after the terrorist attack, and I'm like, we're going now to Brussels. How are people pretty freaked out over there? What's going on? And, like, it was not good. They're like, oh, there's a live active shooter situation at the Capitol. We're going live, Ben. Go live now. And I'm like, hey, so are people getting shot? What's going on over there? And I would go to the producer afterwards, and she's like, Ben, you seemed a little nervous. I was like, well, I'm not used to dealing with live terrorist situations. My bad. It was intense, dude. It was not for me. Like, I pride myself that I can do most things and most forms of entertainment I can do. I can host a game show. I can do whatever you need. I left that time at ABC News. I was on there for 1 week, and I said, this is not for me.
Yeah.
This is for other people. I comment on the world. I don't give it straight and try to be the calm source of whatever.
That's a talent all to itself. But you said you do respond well to pressure. And in the interview that I read with you, it had to do with deadlines. But you were terrified of being called on in class, as I was, because of my dyslexia. Reading from the book where everyone had to read a paragraph and go to the next person.
Yep.
Yeah, shoot me. I'd rather chew tin foil and hope to hit a filling. I can't read. Can't do that at all. And you had to overcome a speech impediment, so that must have been doubly worse for you.
Yeah, that was why I was, like, really next level freaked out when I'd be called on. I literally couldn't talk. I mean, I'd be called on, and it wasn't like I would jumble words. My vocal cords would lock down, and I'd be like, I just could not make sounds come out of my vocal cords. It was very frightening to think of how I went from that somehow to being on live TV in front of millions or in front of huge, you know, arenas. I've opened on tours for Chelsea Handler and Dane Cook, 12,000 people at a time, and my heart rate doesn't even raise a beat. And back in the day, in front of 15 people in class, I would be like, there would be nothing scarier. Like, there was a boulder on my chest.
What was it? What was the issue? Because it was a stutter, and how did you overcome it? Was it psychosomatic? Was it physical?
It was psychosomatic. I always knew it was. I would go to speech therapists forever, and they would teach you these, like, weird techniques, these physical techniques to clear a block. Like, put an H sound before a hard sound. That's harder for you, like an M.
Yeah.
So instead of saying, hi, mom, you go, hi, mom, and you sound like some breathy weirdo. And
with a mother complex.
Exactly right. And that was not in the cards for me. So I just knew I was seeing it wrong. And, like, I remember the one insight that my therapist had that was very helpful for me. She had me read a whole thing, and I eventually got through it. And she said, what was it about? And I go, I don't know. I was too busy reading it. I wanted to come off perfect. And she goes, first of all, there's no such thing as perfection. Secondly, don't worry so much about your presentation. Worry about the content.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like, being shallow. I was so worried about coming off well. I was trying to be Brian Williams instead of actually conveying the point and the messages.
Right.
And so I just realized I was seeing it wrong. And then I had all this whole series of realizations after that, where, like, you know, it's people's greatest fear, public speaking, but it's so ego-based. You think you're so important that people not only care what you're saying, but how you're saying it. No one's expecting Martin Luther King Jr. up there. They're barely listening. They have low expectations. If they're listening, they're trying to get one nugget of info from you, or maybe a joke. They're not trying to be inspired by your cadence.
Right.
So get over yourself. Then take a step back, and you're on a planet with 8 billion people. You think the way you're saying the one out of 8 billion people saying things right now matters? Then zoom out further, and you're floating on a marble in outer space. You think on your one dot, on the tinier dot, floating in space, out of control, matters at all? Get the fuck over yourself.
Yeah.
And I was able to calm down, and just my tension melted away, and my speech problem did too.
That's great. So, all right. So, if I'm understanding you correctly, it was an overinflated of self-esteem, or an overinflated of value of the opinion of others?
I think it was just an overinflated sense of importance when you're talking. Oh, I'm speaking now. Now's my moment to shine. Oh,
okay.
Oh, now I'm, and I learned to realize that it's not. it doesn't mean anything. It's mm-hmm. no different when you're speaking in front of people or performing comedy than somebody serving fries at McDonald's or working as an account executive wherever. We're all just a cog in the machine kind of doing our own role.
Okay, so it's the value of the function. It's just another function, and that helped you. It was because I was looking for I know what mine when I get a little tied up, it's because I'm connected to the outcome. I want the laugh. I want the reinforcement and stuff. You know, we're actors. Look what we do for. We want the applause. You know.
Yes.
But the thing, because I know for my machine, I want that because I want to fill that hole because I have low self-esteem that I have to, you know, overcome, right? And you have a joke in your act that I love. I've got to play this because it kind of hits the same nerve.
I had a date one time with a very beautiful girl by accident. I don't even know how it happened. I think I won a raffle. I don't know how it happened. And she wanted to cook me dinner in my on-campus apartment, and she did. And she cooked. And we were drinking during dinner. We got a little buzz going on. And I never thought it could have gone this well. So at the end of dinner, she looks at me, and she goes, I have a very early morning tomorrow. So do you mind setting your alarm clock for me? And I swear to God, I looked at her and said, you want to borrow my alarm clock? And then I unplugged my alarm clock. And ended it. 3 days later, I was walking through campus and it hit me. And I was like, no.
That is great. Not only did that happen to me, I went on a date. I went on a date with in high school. The most beautiful girl in our high school couldn't get a date for the prom. So my friend said, take her to the prom. I go, and I just thought I was being nice. She liked me.
Damn.
She liked me. But I couldn't process that she liked me. And
you took her to the prom, and you couldn't make it happen.
I never thought to try. She liked me. I just thought I was doing a favor. I didn't know, you know, because she was this goddess of high school, and I was the funny kid who made people laugh so we didn't get beat up, you know?
Yeah, that's the biggest problem is that forever, I mean, way after that incident, whenever I saw that girl, it was quite awkward, but forever after that, I just, like, I was a real late bloomer. Like, I didn't lose my virginity till very late. Mm-hmm. Compared to most people, and even after that, I like didn't exactly know how to like make a move on the girl to take you to that. Like I could maybe kiss somebody eventually when I was in my like early 20s, but I couldn't ever fathom how you could go all the way until I figured it out. But until you go all the way to like having sex with somebody, just the principle of like, I'm sorry, I'm supposed to remove somebody's underwear? I just take off. I'm assuming she's so into this, I'm going to peel off her undergarments and just have her be naked and she's going to be fine with that? I couldn't wrap my head around the plausibility that somebody would be into that.
Wow.
I got over it and I became pretty good at it, but you know.
Thank God. So you got a fiance, right? You're engaged now?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I am.
There was one.
Don't tell her.
Is she a civilian? Is your fiance a civilian or is she in the business?
She's a civilian, thank God. She is a normal human. She's a dental hygienist, so I get free cleanings. That's the main reason we're together. And she just became a week ago a professor of dental hygiene. So she is now, not only is that incredible, and what's that?
She teaches dental hygiene?
Teaches dental hygiene at a university, at a college. And so not only is that really impressive and I'm very proud of her, but another of my fantasies just came true. So that's exciting. Both dental hygienist and professor in one. It's a dream come true.
That's right. Okay, now we're going to rinse.
And that's her as the professor character.
Yeah. You are a very funny man, my friend. Congratulations. When is the big day? When is the wedding?
Thank you so much. I don't know when the wedding is.
Oh, so she's
very
bought
anxious.
That.
Yes.
I
yes,
love you. I want to marry you, honey. When?
No, soon. She's the one actually. No, she's the one delaying it now. She was really anxious to get engaged for a long time, and I kind of made her wait 4 years. As soon as I asked her, she's turned the tables on me. She's like, now you'll wait. We'll see what we're doing. She really pulled a power move, dude. I don't know how she did it, but I'm like, for a while, I was like, what do you mean? Let's get married as soon as we can. She's like, oh, as soon as we can? Yeah. 4 years later? And I'm like, fine. We're just going to wait. So now it's like kind of a standoff. We're just staring at each other. Both of us refuse to set a date.
That's funny.
Maybe if my special blows up, we make enough money, I'll be able to get a nicer wedding. If not, we're just waiting it out.
There you go. Ben, people want to get a hold of you. Where do they go?
My phone number is 310-5... Please follow me at Ben Gleib, B-E-N-G-L-E-I-B, on all social media. I'm on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. It's B Gleib. Ben Gleib on Twitter. I post 5 videos a week of my stand-up and this political commentary, social commentary I'm doing for TYT as well. You can check that out. And subscribe to my podcast, Last Week on Earth, where I summarize the world every week or the weeks that I make the time to do it. Mm-hmm. And then please just watch The Mad King on YouTube. Search Gleib Special or The Mad King. And if you like it, please share it, leave comments, do all the things so we can hopefully get this seen by more people and my life won't be all kind of for nothing, you know?
Well, I can't thank you enough, my friend. Best to you and your family.
Thank you so much. You too, Adam. This is Ben Gleib, and that was 30 Minutes I'll Never Get Back.
He was a very interesting guy, honey. I like talking to him.
Yeah. I liked how his girlfriend said, you haven't done any of your to-do list. Get off the couch and go see a shrink because I think you got a problem.
That, you know what's nice? I think you have a problem. Not you're lazy and I'm not marrying you.
She didn't say that.
She goes, there might be something wrong. Let me have you checked.
No, there better be something wrong. I'm not put up with this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that interview made me think. I don't know if I have ADHD, but it did make me think. I do hyper-focus on things. I think I have the positive aspects of ADHD.
There's a positive aspect?
Yeah.
What is it?
You know this. I hyper-focus on things.
I don't see that as a positive. I see that as something I just have to stay out of the way of.
Yeah. That's pretty much like, no, I can't do it yet, Adam.
Yeah.
No, I can't do it yet.
Yeah.
Or like you try and move me or give me a hug and I'm like, hold on.
Yeah, that's nice. That's
nice. I can tell the dogs that. Hold on.
So the positive aspect of what you think you have is denying affection to your husband and your animals.
No, I'm just super hyper focused on what I'm doing. And that means I do it to detail. You know what? I looked this up. You know what famous person had this problem?
I do not.
Leonardo da Vinci.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't want to hug him. I want to hug you.
He hyper-focused on things, but he didn't get a whole lot done.
No.
That's what I also read. So yeah, I'm kind of excited. Now that explains a lot.
What does it explain?
Explains why I like to have a TV show going on in the background because it keeps me in that hyper-focus mode.
Mm-hmm. I need background noise too. I have a lot of that stuff, especially during football season. It's grown men bitching and moaning about a game I've saw and the highlights I saw about the game. And now their opinions of the game, of the highlights and the game I saw. So I get it.
But does it give you more comfort or does it keep you focused? I think it gives you more comfort.
It's just something that it distracts the crazy part of my mind that keeps me from screaming and yelling.
Okay. You know? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think there's definitely certain degrees of this ADHD.
Mm-hmm. So what we've learned is my ADHD is a lot better during football season.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because you're distracted.
See? So football serves a purpose.
Yes. I'm all for it.
Especially if I win. Then. If I hit a parlay, things are right with the world.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so other things I looked up about ADHD.
Go ahead.
Is that you can be impulsive.
Impulsiveness?
Yeah.
Do you think I got that? I don't think I got that.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Disorganization and problem prioritizing.
I'm disorganized, but I prioritize pretty well.
Yeah, you do.
Okay, so
maybe
I don't
you
have
don't
that.
You don't have it, Adam.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm cured.
Poor time management skills.
Nope, I'm good. You have that. Put that in your bucket. Hyper focus. Yes. The more we're learning about this, the more you should take the medicine.
What is it? The tides are turning.
Yes.
No, I don't. I can't take medicine. Are you kidding? Problem focusing on a task. No, that's not me.
I don't think we both have that. Go ahead.
Trouble multitasking.
I have that.
I don't.
No, you don't. You can do a lot of different things at once. Me, I got to do one thing. Don't talk to me. So, all right, I have that one.
Okay. Excessive activity or restlessness.
Yeah.
That's all you.
That's all me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Poor planning.
Nope. I'm like a field general. I have charts and graphs and I have all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I prefer you plan things.
I know. Because I'll plan everything and then you'll just show up and say, what's the plan?
Yeah. And then I'll change it.
And then she changes it. Yeah. So that.
It'll come out better, you know.
All right.
All right. Okay. The next one is low frustration tolerance.
Oh, yeah. I can't. I'll kill somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is you. Unless I don't eat. Then it's me too.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take more to hit. Yeah.
Okay. Frequent mood swings.
Mm-hmm.
That depends on the time of month. Sorry. I mean, just being honest.
Yeah. Okay. But, you know what? She is being honest. She really is. I come home. Hi, honey.
Hello. I'm like, all right, this is going to suck for 3 days. 3 days, this is going to suck.
As long as I have my animals around you, I am better.
Yeah. And then they're cowering in the corner, too. The dogs are like, hey, why do we got to go near her? Just let her pet you. Just let her pet you.
Funny.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Problems following through and completing tasks.
Let's get it done now.
I prioritize certain things and then I push off certain things.
Yeah.
So things that I really want to do, I do it. Mm-hmm. Things I don't want to do, I push off.
Okay. Fair enough.
Hot temper.
Hello.
That's all you, Adam.
I got it.
Trouble coping with stress.
I don't have trouble. I scream and yell at the first sign of stress. The first sign of stress, everybody knows it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if I was in Ben's position when he was hosting the news and we had to go to a live shooter series, I'd be like, are you kidding me? Why are you watching TV? Call the police. I would have flipped out.
See, I'm the opposite. I get really quiet or I get really still or and then I'm like, OK, how are we going to solve this problem?
What, when you in a stressful situation?
Yeah. It's weird. It's good. I know that about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like when things have happened.
Like what?
Like once my sister put her hand through glass and it was bleeding and everybody was freaking out. And I'm like, okay, everybody staying calm. And I knew exactly what to do. Put her hand up. Let's tie a little tourniquet on. Keep it up. And we're going to the hospital. And I drove everyone there.
That's good.
Yeah.
I have that too. If someone's in trouble, I can do that. That switch goes off. But then we're like, but what if we, then if you stop the train that I'm on, I will run you over. I can't, I have no time to answer questions. Don't ask a question. You're either getting on this train or you're going to bleed out. So that's, I do have that switch that goes off in my head.
Yeah. I've seen that. And I know to get on that train.
Mm.
Like you have sometimes you don't have time to explain why you're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like, just get on back. And you're like, okay. Yeah. And then everything works out.
Yeah. You should be more open. Nope. Not in a pressure situation. We got to get out of this. We'll discuss later. When the bullets stop flying over our head, then we can chat. Until then, let's follow. We got to take this hill.
Right. Now, like little situations that happen, I get kind of stressed out.
What?
Like, I can't find my favorite dress.
Oh, God. That's
right. Someone took it.
Yeah. But someone stole the dress. All right, we had an apartment in New York. She couldn't find something. She goes, the superintendent stole my dress. That's when I realized, I'm just going to let her scream and go get her some chocolate. Because I know what.
Smart man.
I know what this is about.
I can hyper focus and be calm in a very life or death situation, but I lose it over misplacing a garment.
Yeah. And if it gets really bad, I'm going to Canada and I'm getting some weed out of a vase that Ben stashed.
Oh my gosh, how funny was that?
I know.
And then right when he starts smoking, he's like, oh, wait a second, I left that. That's so funny.
That's great. I can just see that realization coming over him and he's high and then he's hungry. What are you going to eat?
I have a chicken cutlet with
risotto. Hilarious.
I want to thank Ben Glee for being my guest.
Yeah, Ben, and thank you for helping me diagnose. You know how that always turns out well.
Yeah, that's fine. Great. Now, here's the thing, honey. We both can't be crazy at the same time.
No, right? And I don't think we should be self-diagnosing.
No, we shouldn't. If people want to get a hold of us, where do they go?
TheAdamFerrara@gmail.com.
Thank you guys so much. Please come see me on the road. I will make you laugh. We still have t-shirts. A bunch of people bought some t-shirts. They just told me so. They're still available. There's a link for those in the show notes. If you get a chance to leave us a review, that helps us with our friend,
Mr. Algorithm.
And remember, we are in this together, brothers and sisters. So share the road. Life is hard. So you take it easy on yourself. The pod has ended. Go in peace. It's not nervous energy. It's just, I got to move.
No,
I think
you could pace.
If you stay still, it bothers you.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's tougher to hit a moving target.
Sounds like you have a lot more problems than ADD.